3 o'clock. The temperature now 50 degrees. Humidity is 37%.
Good afternoon from Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. The American Broadcasting Company brings you an address by the President of the United States before the inaugural session of the fourth meeting of consultation of ministers of foreign affairs of American states. The first speaker we will hear on this program will be Dr. William Menger, Assistant Secretary General of the Organization of American States and Secretary General of the meeting. He will introduce Secretary Acheson, who will introduce President Truman. Dr. Menger.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Provisional President of the Fourth Meeting of Consultation of Ministers of Foreign Affairs of the American States, appointed by the President of the United States, will convene the meeting. Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the Secretary of State of the United States. In accordance with the Charter of the Organization of American States, the Council of the Organization has convoked the fourth meeting of consultation of Ministers of Foreign Affairs of American States. The Council has designated Washington as the seat of the meeting and has fixed today, March 26, as the date of the inaugural session. The fourth meeting is hereby convened. Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States of America.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Secretary, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it is an honor to open this meeting of the Ministers of Foreign Affairs of the American Republics. I am happy to extend to you a wholehearted welcome of our country and to our capital city. On behalf of the United States, I hope that this will be a most satisfactory and successful meeting. This is the fourth meeting of the Ministers of Foreign Affairs of the American Republics. This meeting, like the earlier ones, is held at a time of international danger. When the first meeting was held in 1939, war had just broken out in Europe. As that conflict spread to nation after nation and threatened to extend to all parts of the world, the foreign ministers of the American republics held two more meetings in 1940 and in 1942 to plan a common course of action against the common danger. As a result of our concerted efforts, our countries did not become a theater of war. The nations of this hemisphere succeeded in protecting the American continents from invasion. And as a result of our common efforts, the people of the Americas were able to contribute power and resources which turned the tide against aggression and brought victory to the forces of freedom. Today we meet again to consider our common defense. We meet again to work out ways and means by which our united strength may be employed in the struggle for freedom throughout the world. The American republics all owe their national beginnings to the same set of ideals, the same concepts of human and international freedom. We have all followed, and we will continue to follow, two basic principles. First, we believe that international affairs should be based upon cooperation among free and independent nations, and not upon coercion and force. Second, we believe that the aim and purpose of government is to promote the welfare of all the people, not just a privileged few. These principles have long been the basis of relations among the American republics. The same principles are now embodied in the Charter of the United Nations, where they have become the foundation of a new society of nations. The statesmen of the American republics have shown their continuing devotion to these principles by the great and constructive work they have done in creating and strengthening the United Nations. Today, these principles are under relentless attack from a center of power which denies the whole concept of human freedom. Whether it be spiritual freedom, or economic freedom, or political freedom. Communist imperialism attacks and undermines national independence and international cooperation. In their place, it substitutes a rule of force. Communist imperialism also seeks to destroy the system of government that serves the welfare of the people. Instead, it sets up a system under which the people exist only to serve the purposes of the government. As a result, the Soviet system is one of unbridled power, imposing slavery at home and aggression abroad. The aggressive expansion of the Soviet power threatens the whole world. In Europe, we see it trying to engulf the nations from which we have drawn our cultural beginnings. If Soviet subversion and Soviet armed force were to overthrow these nations, the consequences for all of us in the Western Hemisphere would be disastrous. We would lose those cultural and religious ties which mean so much to us. The international trade on which we are so dependent would be violently disrupted. Worst of all, we would be confronted by a hostile power on the shores of the Atlantic, capable of using the great economic resources of our conquered friends to strike across the ocean at our own independence. We must not and will not let that happen. We in the Western Hemisphere must help the free men of Europe who are resisting Soviet expansion. In the Far East, communist imperialism presents us with another threat. There we see many new nations emerging, as our own countries once did, from colonial status to full independence. For these new nations, we of the Western Hemisphere have the greatest feeling of fellowship. But communist imperialism has fallen upon these new nations with its weapons of internal subversion and external attack. It seeks to overpower them before they are strong enough to stand alone. If Soviet communism were to be successful in this venture, it would be a terrible blow to the bright promise of the principles of freedom and peace which we uphold. The great manpower of Asia would become one of the instruments of the aggressive expansion of the Soviet system toward our own hemisphere. Both to the east, therefore, and to the west, we are confronted by great perils. Our future progress, our very survival, lies in the defense of the world order of free nations of which we are a part. Our very existence depends upon the success of those principles which our countries stand for and which we have supported in the United Nations. There is no safety for any of us in abandoning these principles. There will be no security in the world without the United Nations. Powerful and productive as the Western Hemisphere is, it cannot make it safe by building a wall around itself. Instead of withdrawing into our hemisphere in a hopeless attempt to find security through retreat, we must concert our defenses and combine our strength in order to support men in Europe and Asia who are battling for freedom. That is the only course that can lead to security or peace, or freedom, for us or from men anywhere in the world. Recognition of this fact lies behind the aid the United States has given to the rebuilding of Europe. It lies behind the struggle the free nations are now waging in the hills of Korea. The resistance of the United Nations to aggression in Korea, a resistance that has the firm approval of all the nations represented here, is of momentous importance. It has shown that the free nations are determined to defend their ideals of national independence and human welfare. The issue in Korea is the survival of the principles on which we have built our countries. The principle of national independence and self-government is at stake there, as well as the principle that government shall be for the welfare of the people. If justice and order do not prevail in Korea, they will be in danger everywhere in the world. Heroic sacrifices are being made in Korea to check the forces of aggression and to protect us against the terrible destruction and vastly greater sacrifices of a world conflict. By standing firm in Korea and by preparing to meet aggression elsewhere, we are doing our best to prevent a third world war. This meeting in Washington, therefore, must consider not only what should be done to improve the defense of this hemisphere, but also what measures we can best undertake to support and strengthen the United Nations in its effort to establish world peace. We meet here as a region which has already, in solemn treaty of Rio de Janeiro, announced its intention to defend itself through cooperative action. We are pledged to resist the common foe. We must now plan as a primary text for the strengthening and the coordinated use of our defense forces in this hemisphere. We must also consider how we may best use our strength to support the cause of freedom against aggression throughout the world. The success of our defense program depends upon our economic strength. In these troubled times, defense production must have prior claim upon our economic resources. We shall have to increase the production of strategic materials. We shall have to divert manufacturing capacity to defense purposes. These necessities will create many difficult practical problems for our countries to solve. There will be shortages of basic materials and other commodities. There will be limitations on certain kinds of capital expansion. The first step in solving these problems is to face them in a spirit of cooperation. We must recognize that we are engaged as good neighbors in a common enterprise that is vital to our survival as free and democratic nations. We must establish the principle of sharing our burdens fairly. We must act together to meet essential civilian needs, and at the same time, we must act together to be sure that scarce supplies are limited to essential uses. We must try to prevent wild and speculative price movements in our international trade, whether in raw materials or manufactured products. Our defense needs are not, of course, limited to the things that go into the making of weapons. We need to build up our economic strength in a much broader way. It is essential to our security that we constantly enlarge our economic capacity. Our defense needs include, in many cases, and in many areas, more food, better education, and better health services. They include, in certain cases, the building of roads, dams, or power plants. We must remember that the real strength of the free nations lies in the will and determination of their peoples. The free nations stand for economic progress and social advancement. They grow in strength by going forward along the road of greater economic opportunity for all. Over the last 10 years, our countries have made great economic progress. In most of the countries represented here, national income is at least twice what it was in 1939. An important factor in our advance is the program of technical cooperation, which we have joined together to carry out. Joint projects for spreading technical knowledge have already made notable achievements in improving the health, education, and living standards of our people. We intend to press on with this kind of activity. The American Republic are full of breathtaking possibilities for future economic development. These possibilities can be made reality only if we work and plan together for a long time ahead. I like to think, for example, of the possibility of developing the vast areas of wilderness such as the eastern slopes of the Andes, and turning them into new and fertile farmland.